Welcome to You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm your host, Mike McGrath. Coming up later in the show, we answer an enormous amount of questions about stinging insects, how to get rid of a yellow jacket nest safely, what you do when you can't find the nest and it's just yellow jackets everywhere, and what about when bad wasps want to move into your house and take over the remote on your television. We will cover all those topics in the question of the week. But mostly it's a fascinating phone call show. So we're taking that heap and helping at 1-888-346-9499. Joanne, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hey, Mike.
Hello, Joanne. How are you?
I'm doing wonderful. How are you?
I am excellent today. Where is Joanne Wonderful?
I live in Crawfordville, but right now I'm in Tallahassee.
Oh, so you're a Tallahassee lassie down in Florida.
You got it.
All right. What can we do for you?
Well, I called you a while back about a nematode problem that I had in my garden.
Mm-hmm.
They just completely decimated my garden, my okra, my tomatoes. Everything was eaten up by those root knot nematodes. And you advised me to pull everything up, pull up all the beds, till it up, and sow it completely in marigolds, and then till those into the soil. So what I did was, I think it was October, I sowed some Elbin cereal rye in there first. Then I tilled that in, and then sowed marigold seeds in April, and now it's time to till those in. And I was just wondering, do I have to till them in, or can I just plop my raised beds down on top of those flowers and not worry about doing all that work since they're going to just compost into the soil anyway? I was just wondering what your opinion is on that.
We in the north think of nematodes only as beneficial creatures that we order, and we water them into the soil, and they destroy our lawn grubs, and they get rid of fleas in our backyard. They're really wondrous, beneficial creatures, whereby nematodes are a huge family with some really nasty members, the worst of which is the root knot nematode, which literally in many, many sections of Florida makes it impossible to grow tomatoes in the ground. They attack the roots. The roots get all these galls on them. They can't take up nutrition anymore. And once you've got the nematodes in your soil, it's very difficult. And luckily, while I was the editor of Organic Gardening, we saw this wonderful research where I remember they did the rye. The rye was very effective, but the most effective was they tested the old marigold theory, that if you planted marigolds all around your tomatoes, the root knot nematodes would stay away. And, of course, they didn't. But then they plowed the field under, and once the marigolds got into the soil, the nematodes just got out of Dodge like nobody's business. They couldn't find a single nematode in the soil. How giant a field of marigolds do you have?
I have like a 40-40 area fenced in, and it's just wall-to-wall marigolds, and they're blooming. Of course, this time of year now, they're starting to look a little ratty. A couple of months ago, it was gorgeous.
And isn't this the best pest control ever to grow this tremendous flower garden that people must just stop and stare at?
Well, I don't have any close neighbors, but people who do come to the house comment on how pretty it is. And I'll tell you, one side benefit is the butterflies. There are so many butterflies out there.
There's just no downside to this technique. This is in a flat ground that you intend to build raised beds in anyway, right?
That's right. I just want to put my raised beds back in there and fill them up and start my fall garden just like it used to be before I got this problem.
I think you have a brilliant idea.
I would
drop the frames right over top of the marigolds as they're starting to fail. You know, make sure the frames are no wider than 4 feet so you can reach the center without stepping in. Make sure you got 2 foot lanes in between. So I think if you make them like 10 or 12 inches high and the marigolds are like 6 inches, you've got this mat of marigold roots that the root knot nematodes would have to get past to get at the roots of your plants, and they're not going to do it. It's like kryptonite to them.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, what about in the beginning, when I first built this little raised bed area, I took soil just straight out of the area and put like half of my regular garden soil and half compost for the beds. But I don't think I can do that now, number one, because it's full of marigolds, and number two, I'm worried there might be a stray nematode or two in there. And so what do you recommend I do about that?
There won't be any nematodes in the soil that has marigold roots in it. But when people are building raised beds, I think the smartest thing is to get a big load of high-quality screen blacktop soil, mix that half and half with compost, and start out with that as your mix.
Okay, I got you. Well, that is great news, and my husband's going to be very happy about that because he was not looking forward to pulling out that tiller and tilling all those marigolds in.
Oh, what a great mental image. I'm so glad you went through with this, and I can virtually guarantee it's going to be years and years and years before you see another nematode.
Well, that is awesome, Mike. Thank you so much. I love your show, and I always take your advice. You're great.
Well, thank you. It was great to hear from you.
Okay, Mike. You take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
1-888-346-9499. Mark, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Thank you, sir.
Well, thank you, Mark. How are you?
Good today. How are you?
Good. Very good. And where is Mark Good today?
Mechanicsburg, Pennsylvania.
Okay. Very good. What can we do for Mark in Mechanicsburg?
Well, recently I was tending to my potted garden, and I found some cone-shaped, very small groups around the base of the plants. These were mint plants.
Mm-hmm.
So I took some pictures and blew them up. And when you look at them, they have little black seed pods inside, and they're shaped like a cone. I could not find any information about it on the internet and looked through a few older books that I had about, you know, gardening. We couldn't find anything there either. So I reached out to your show to find out more.
So you have mint growing in pots?
Yes, sir.
That's a very smart man, Mark, because you know what happens if you put mint in the ground.
It's very invasive.
Yeah, you grow a mint lawn, you give your neighbors a mint lawn, you can kill all your mint at the end of the season, and you'll have more mint the following year than you know what to do with. What kind of containers are these?
Well, I recycle some of the bags that I get the soil or compost in. I buy leaf grass compost in bags.
Oh, okay.
So I recycle the bags that way.
So you have a bag garden?
A mix. It's a mix. I have some 5-gallon buckets. I also have some halved plastic 55-gallon drums, which I salvaged.
Did any of these bags have wood mulch in them? Is there wood mulch on the surface of the pots or anything like that?
The only product that was put into the mix was from my landlord, who brought a front-end loader bucket of some soil from one of the edges of his soybean fields.
Huh.
That's the only component that I could have thought of that would have brought that with it.
Because what you're describing to me sounds like a classic nuisance fungi, that rather than be living plants, these are actually mushrooms.
Interesting.
And that what you're seeing as seeds would probably be the spores of the next generation. And it's very easy to check. This is the first year they've shown up, so you're just kind of poking at them and looking at them, right?
Yes, I took some very close-up pictures to get more of an idea of what it was.
Was there a root system?
Yes.
Really? And what color were the roots?
Very small roots, whitish.
Yes. Those, quote, white roots are what's called mycelium. And they are what gives birth to the fruiting body that we then know as a mushroom or a fungus or something like that. And, of course, these primitive organisms reproduce by dropping spore. In most cases, these spontaneous kind of fungi pop up in things like wood mulch. They can't resist wood mulch. Because for many of the fungal organisms, part of their job in the environment is to break down wood. Like when a tree falls in the forest, you know, we know eventually over like 10, 15, 20 years, it disappears. And a lot of time, it is mushrooms. It is fungal organisms that are doing the work. But I think you have kind of a rogue spore that either blew into your garden or came in with some of this soil somewhere or the other, and now you have a tiny little mushroom farm. And for God's sake, don't try to eat them. You know?
No, that's okay. Well, thank you very much, and I really appreciate the quality of information that you provide.
Oh, well, thank you, Mark. Thanks for providing a question that I could provide quality answer for. It's always a treat for me.
All right. Well, take care, sir.
You too. Bye-bye.
All right. Bye.
Well, it's time for me to take a little break and remind homeowners who had a lot of Japanese beetle problems this summer that now is the time to spread milky spore on your lawn. Now, milky spore may sound a little weird, but it's a highly effective and totally non-toxic way to dispose of grubs feeding on the roots of your turf, and perhaps to keep your lawn grub-free for decades to come. But don't go looking for all the details in the A to Z Answers section of our website just yet, because we'll be right back with more of your fabulous phone calls and what to do when stinging insects attack. I'm Mike McGrath, and this is You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia.
Burpee supports You Bet Your Garden and reminds growers that late summer is the time to prepare to plant garlic and spring bulbs and to start pansies, salad greens, broccoli, and other cool weather lovers. Learn more at burpee.com.
Welcome back to You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm your host, Mike McGrath. Coming up later in the show, yellow jackets, paper wasps, mud daubers, they are all capable of stinging, and it's no fun to get stung. This is the time of year when they get even angrier than normal. We'll tell you how to deal with them in many types of situations after lots more of your fascinating phone calls at 1-888-346-9499. Walter, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi, Mike. How are you today?
I'm doing good, Walt. How are you?
No, I'm just fine. I was driving through Memphis the other day and I heard you talking to a gentleman and had terrible squirrel problems.
And where are you, Walter?
Well, actually, I'm back over in Arkansas. I'm not too far from Memphis again today, heading toward Wisconsin.
Are you a truck driver?
Yes, sir.
What are you hauling?
Right now, I'm hauling paper.
Okay.
The issue was the squirrels eating the tomato plants.
Oh, yes. Driving people crazy.
Yes, yes.
And they don't eat the tomato plants, Walt. You know what they do. They take a single bite out of every ripe tomato because they're evil.
Well, when I built my house, I built it out of Western Red Cedar. and was immediately attacked by woodpeckers and squirrels who like to chew on it.
Yep, I've heard that.
And an old man told me to go to a dime store and buy plastic snakes, and I laughed. Well, after fighting him for a while, I decided I'd take him up on it. So about Halloween time, I happened to be in a dollar store with my kids, and there was a bunch of plastic snakes. I bought the snakes, packed them up on the corners of my home where I have the red cedar trim, and I'll be danged if it didn't do away with the woodpeckers and the squirrels. So I consequently decided, since I was having trouble with a nibbling on tomatoes, that I would try hanging some on the cages. And lo and behold, it seems to work. Plastic snakes that you can buy readily from a dime store. I bought them from a dollar store, primarily just a black and green variety, and it seems to work.
Plastic snakes yes. are an old trick. I mean, there were people recommending this back in the 50s. You put some rubber snakes around and a fake owl or two, and depending on the gullibility of your local squirrels, it often works.
Yes, yes.
We're starting to get towards Halloween season. People are going to find these things in every drugstore and every hardware store. So I'll even add another tip. Wait till the day after Halloween. Locate all the plastic snakes you find, and the day after Halloween, go buy them when they're 50 and 75% off.
Absolutely.
All right, Walter, you drive safe, and thanks for your tips, man.
Not a problem, Mike. Enjoy listening to you. I hear you all over the country, man, on various stations.
All right. Well, that's great. You keep listening and drive safely.
All right. Thank you, Mike. Have a good day.
You too, sir. 1-888-346-9499. Lorraine, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hello.
Hello, Lorraine. How are you?
I'm doing just fine today.
And where is Lorraine just fine?
In Wrangell, Alaska.
Oh, you're up in Alaska. Now, are you in, and I never, even though I've been there, I never seem to call it the right thing. Are you in Southeast Alaska, the kind of island chain, or are you up on the mainland?
I'm in Southeast Alaska, right at the mouth of the Stikine River.
Okay. And the name of your town is?
Wrangell.
And what town, where would the ferry stop on your island?
It stops here.
Oh, okay. I don't remember that being on my route. Maybe it was just the wrong time of day when we got there. I took the ferry back down from Juneau, back down to Bellingham, Washington. What a beautiful way to see the beauty of the Alaskan wilderness and just the mountains and the glory and the water and the wildlife. It was just stunning.
Yeah, it's great here.
All right, we should talk some gardening here. Lorraine, what can we do for you?
Well, I have a problem with earwigs. And they are just multiplying like crazy.
And what do you think they're damaging?
I don't know.
Oh.
But they're just all over, and they come into the house and...
Oh, that's no fun. Earwigs are a very unusual pest, so to speak, in that they have a bad reputation, you know, because they look serious, because they got those pinchers, and they run around a lot. But back when I was at Organic Gardening, the best we could figure out was they might damage some crops a little bit, but they were very beneficial in fruit trees, where they would attack pests of tree fruit. So, you know, I like my earwigs because I grow a lot of peaches. But you don't, I know when they get too many, they can just be pestiferous and you don't want them coming into the house. So there's a great little trick with earwigs. And do you have an old ratty hose that you've used to water the garden that's got run over, it's got holes in it?
Yes.
Take that hose and cut it into foot-long sections. And leave the sections out where you see the earwigs. And then in the morning, pick up the sections, plug up both ends with your thumbs, take it right over to a big bucket of soapy water, and dump it in. All the earwigs, they love, this is like their perfect hiding spot. They will all go and hide in this severed piece of hose. You'll get hundreds in every dunking. And then you can either do the same thing in the house, or you can leave out sticky traps. just sticky pieces of paper along the sides of the floor. And that's a great way to get rid of earwigs or those annoying crickets that are keeping you up at night.
Yeah, we don't get the crickets, but we have the earwigs, and I was just wondering what they ate.
Well, I think out in the world, I think they prey on other insects. I know they are so beneficial in some circumstances that they are released into trees in Europe to control certain pests. But I think like a lot of other insects, they might be opportunistic. Like if a peach drops on the ground, you know, after it splits open, you'll find slugs in there, earwigs in there, millipedes, ants. But they're there because it's already damaged. They didn't throw it down from the tree.
I see. Now, another thing I have is a potato bug-like outside.
And
kind of flat and oval. And
is it on your potatoes?
No, they're in my garden.
But what are they
doing? They're in my flower garden. I don't know if they do any damage or anything.
Oh, Lorraine, trust me, gardeners can figure out pretty quick which bugs are doing damage. So if you really want to do something, I know the garden stores up there stock a lot of diatomaceous earth. This is a mined substance that looks like flour to us, but it's very sharp on a microscopic level. If you dust that around the plants, that'll get rid of any soft-bodied pests that crawl over top of it.
Yeah.
All right, Lorraine, you enjoy your beautiful scenery up there in Alaska.
Oh, I do, and I will. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your call. Take care.
Okay, bye-bye.
1-888-346-9499. Jim, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi, Mike. How are you doing?
I'm doing good, Jim. How are you, sir?
Pretty good.
And where are you pretty good?
I live in Short Mountain, Tennessee, about 60 miles southeast of Nashville.
Oh, okay. And is it a short mountain?
It is. It's about 2,200 feet high. It's fairly short, but it is a mountain.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's a good size, actually. All right. What can we do for Jim in Short Mountain?
Mike, we've been invaded by the spotted wing Drosophila.
I got to tell you right now, my sincere condolences for your loss.
Well, it was kind of funny what happened. We started picking blueberries, and everything looked just fine. And then, because we've had a lot of rain this year, so there were a few berries that were split up, and we noticed the honeybees started working the berries. The honeybees in this area are starving to death right now because they've had a really bad season. And then we actually thought for a while that the honeybees were sort of ravaging our blueberries, but it wasn't. What happened was we found out that this fruit fly punches little holes in the berry, and then what happened is the bees were just opportunistic. They were pulling the juice out of it, I guess. But beyond our first picking, we sort of lost everything. Now we've got red raspberries coming on, and we actually see them now. We didn't know what hit us to begin with.
Oh. Let me stop you there and explain to our listeners, this is a brand new pest as these things go. It's an Asian fruit fly. I had only begun to hear about it this year. People were telling me this is something I needed to research and start trying to find answers for. And I take it personally because I grow a load of raspberries. That's probably the biggest space in my garden is devoted to raspberry canes. And this fruit fly lays its eggs into the berries just as they're ripening up. And you can pick that berry and eat it within a week, and everything looks fine. But, for instance, if you package them up to sell, and somebody, like, puts them in their fruit a week later than that, all these little maggoty worms come popping out of the berries. It's the most disgusting thing in the world, and that's what happened to you, right?
Yes.
I have a friend who farms near me in Pennsylvania, George and Melanie DeVault, and they have been growing Caroline raspberries very successfully in a hoop house. So getting really early crops, having great success keeping the birds away from them, no problem with the bees coming in to pollinate them. But all of a sudden, apparently it was the perfect situation for this fly to really take over, and it just destroyed their entire raspberry crop and devastated it to the point that when George started to research what the answers were, he pulled up two hoop houses worth of raspberries and just burned them. Just burned the canes. He's out of the raspberry business. Now, interestingly enough, he has a huge old field of blueberries, magnificent high bush plants that are as tall as I am, that have been there for ages, that I go up and pick. And we have yet to find any of the blueberries to be infested, even though they were on his property. So what do you do to keep your blueberry soil acidic, and what do you feed and or mulch them?
Well, first of all, the soil I have, it was made for blueberries. It's a windblown silt. The natural pH is about 4.7.
Yahoo, yeah.
And I'm mulch them every 2 or 3 years. And there's no problem with their growing.
Right, right. I understand that. What do you mulch them with?
What I have been using is the stuff that I get from those guys clear out easements, that sort of thing. They cut all the trees and limbs, and I usually let it set for about a year and then use it.
So you're using wood mulch?
Well, it's wood mixed with leaves and all sorts of things.
Okay. I don't think it's a natural mulch for these plants. Where you are, pine straw should be pretty abundant. If you want to mulch to keep down weeds and keep some good stuff in the soil, I would switch to pine straw. Do you feed the plants anything beyond that?
Not anymore. They're 30 years old.
Right, yeah, I know. They just take off. Same with the raspberries. You just let them grow, right?
Yes.
So here's my thinking. These creatures are fruit flies. Now, one reason I'm glad to talk to you is I want help. A lot of times we'll talk about something like this on the show, and there's some experts out there who have something to tell me, and I'm asking them right now to get in touch. But my first thought is these are true fruit flies, and I'm wondering if on a large scale, vinegar traps or cheap red wine traps might not prove effective. You buy the cheapest red wine you can find, leave it out. Fruit flies will cover the thing 3-4 inches deep. And the nice thing about this is it's not a pheromone or anything, so you're not going to be attracting more of the flies to your canes or to your plants. But if you could intercept them at the perimeter with like little troughs of vinegar or wine, it might be possible to keep their numbers down. There are two organic insecticides that are effective and registered for use on this, one of which is the true neem, not the neem oil, but the azoractin, the insecticidal neem. And neem, of course, is processed from the seed of a tropical tree from India. It's a anti-feedant, and then if the creatures insist on feeding anyway, it kills them. I'm just not sure how safe it is around bees.
Right.
As you noted, bees have been having a hard time lately, and there's a real resistance. One of the problems, as you know, is raspberries are always flowering right around the fruit, so you have to be super careful.
What disturbs me is that the extension people are recommending this stuff called Entrust, which is for, and they've recommended for organic farmers. It's too expensive for most people to buy. I couldn't buy it. But that's spinosads.
Right, and that's...
And they're saying spray this stuff on, and you add, apparently this has glycol in it, antifreeze, to sweeten it up so that they think the flies will drink that. Mm-hmm. But if they would drink it, so would the bees or anything else that was looking for something sweet.
My understanding is that the spinosads, and they are correct, Entrust is a spinosad, and it is approved for use in organic agriculture. My understanding is it's relatively safe for bees 3 hours after it's applied, but it seems scary to me. And yes, it's tremendously expensive as well. So I think we're going to have a combination of sanitation. Obviously, we got to make sure there's no drops in the area. I think traps would be in order. We got to learn more about the life cycle of the creature, but maybe BTI can prevent them from breeding the way it prevents mosquitoes from breeding. So we need to learn more about this, and we certainly need to take care of it because I'm terrified. I got to tell you, man, I am absolutely terrified. So maybe this is a pest that makes a big appearance and then some natural enemies are going to come out. But this is a pest we need to pay attention to. And I promise you, I will follow up on this. I will do an actual question of the week and I will find the best possible solutions.
Thank you so much.
All right. Good luck, Jim.
All right. Thank you so much, Mike.
Take care, bye-bye, sir. Well, it's time for me to take a little break and announce that I'll be the guest speaker at the second annual Frenchtown Green Fair at 1 o'clock on Saturday, September 28th in Frenchtown, New Jersey. Then I'll give a free talk on turning your fall leaves into garden gold for the Lower Merion Conservancy at St. Joseph's University on Wednesday evening, October 23rd. But don't go looking for all the compost-rich details at the events section of our website just yet, because we'll be right back with more of your fabulous phone calls and how to handle wasps that want to sting you. I'm Mike McGrath, and this is You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia.
You Bet Your Garden host Mike McGrath will lead a small group of adventurous plant lovers on a culturally rich tour of the gardens of Cuba this coming January. Details at earthboundexpeditions.com. Earthbound Expeditions supports You Bet Your Garden. Burpee, a national supplier of seeds, plants, and bulbs, supports You Bet Your Garden and reminds growers that now is the time to start fall crops of salad greens, broccoli, cabbage, and cauliflower, and to get ready for garlic planting. More information at burpee.com.
Welcome back to You Bet Your Garden from WHYY-FM in Philadelphia. I'm your host, Mike McGrath, and we're in the stretch now, cats and kittens. In just a little bit, we'll be getting to a multi-part question of the week. How to handle a yellow jacket nest, how to handle yellow jackets when you can't find your nest, and what to do when wasps seem to be trying to move into the house with you. We'll get right to the answers after a couple more of your fascinating phone calls at 1-888-346-9499. Amy, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi.
Hello, Amy. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I am doing just fine, thank you. And where is Amy good?
So I'm in Santa Cruz, California, right on the edge of Monterey Bay.
So what can we do? What can we do for Amy in California?
I moved into my house a couple of years ago, and I've been working on the gardens. I've had trouble choosing plants, and I think it has to do with the weather, but I was wondering if you could give me advice about how to choose what to grow here, because it usually doesn't get hotter than 80 degrees, usually more around like 65 to 70.
Mm-hmm.
And in the winter, it's a little cooler.
But not freezing cold.
No, we get a freeze maybe once or twice a year.
So your climate is more like Portland and Seattle than we are like Southern California.
Yeah. Yeah, which is confusing because apparently we're in zone 9B, but I've tried to grow some things that supposedly grow in 9B, and they didn't come up. And the other variable is that I've tried to grow things from seed and from starts. But some seeds start just fine. Other ones don't come up. Some starts just sit there.
The tricky thing about the zones is all they refer to is the average wintertime lows. Your zone 9B doesn't mean you have hot summers. It just means you really don't ever get any snow cover. The ground rarely ever drops below 30 degrees or anything like that.
Right.
So, yes, you are in an unusual situation. And the odd part is if you want a summertime garden, even though you're in California, you need some sort of little greenhouse or some structure to retain heat. If you want to grow tropical plants like tomatoes or peppers or melons, because it, okay, as you said, it just doesn't get warm enough during the summertime.
Yeah, yeah. And so then can I grow cool season crops all year?
Yes.
Like lettuce?
Absolutely. And is that something you've had trouble growing from seed?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, I started some lettuce seed and it just didn't come up.
Well.
And then I started borage seed and like it came up within days and it's huge.
Okay. What are you growing in? Are you a flat grounder? Have you built raised beds? What kind of place do you have?
I'm doing both and I'm putting most of the food is in the raised beds.
Good.
Other plants are, you know, down.
Okay. Well, you know, the only thing I can think of with the lettuce seed, even though it's a cool weather crop, you know, a lot of these seeds need soil temperatures of 70 to 75 to germinate.
Okay.
So, and what are your raised beds filled with?
I had the landscape supply deliver a load of, it wasn't topsoil, it was like planter soil.
Mm-hmm.
And then I also had them deliver a bunch of mushroom compost.
Oh, okay.
That I've been using for mulching.
So, yeah, that should be fine. When I built the beds where I you, I probably would have mixed that topsoil and mushroom soil half and half and actually used that to fill the beds. Because you notice the mushroom soil, when used as a mulch on the top, has a tendency to kind of cake up a little bit and,
mm-hmm,
and develop ridges. So that's better mixed in with your soil. So here's the plan. You're going to level out one of these raised beds. You're going to go out and buy a big package of salad green seeds or multiple greens. You're going to have like a big row of mesclun. You're going to have a big row of arugula, a big row of baby spinach, a big row of some beautiful red-colored leaf lettuce. And what you're going to do is you're going to make sure the soil is nice and loose, get rid of any weeds, and then you're going to water it well. And in this case, you can water it, if you have this ability, with lukewarm water.
Oh.
And you're going to sow the seeds right on top of that, and then you're going to have at the ready a bag of seed starting mix, a really loose, light mix. You know, just peat perlite, vermiculite, and maybe a little bit of compost, but a bag that has no weight to it.
Mm-hmm.
And you wet the soil first, you sow the seeds, and then you're just going to sprinkle like an eighth of an inch of this mix over top. And then if you have something you can mist it with, that's fine. But you don't want to water it heavily or else you shoot all the seeds around.
Okay.
And then over top of that, you want to drape like a sheer curtain over top of the whole thing. If you want to go for the professional thing, buy a row of what's called Remay, R-E-E-M-A-Y. That's a brand name for floating row cover. You've seen these pictures of the salad fields in Central California covered with these.
Yeah.
That's what this does. It retains a little heat down at the soil surface. That'll capture enough heat down at the soil line to get your green seeds to sprout really quickly. And then once the seeds are up, then they're going to grow just fine in your cool climate. And the nice thing is, if you get really professional row cover, you can leave it on top to protect the crop from any kind of insects and also to keep it a little warmer under there. Light and air and rainwater get through, so the crops grow just fine. But no insects can get in, and these are crops that don't need to be pollinated, and it keeps things nice and warm.
Okay.
All right,
Amy?
That's
really helpful. Thank you so much.
I'll be down to visit. I don't need warm weather. I just want to sit and stare at the Monterey Bay.
Oh, please come. Bye.
All right, you take care. Thank you. Bye-bye. 1-888-346-9499. Frank, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi, Mike. How are you?
I'm doing good, Frank. How are you, sir?
I'm doing really well, too.
Where are you, Frank?
In Lansdowne, just outside of Philadelphia, near Upper Darby.
Okay, very good. Lansdowne, Pennsylvania. What can we do for Frank?
It's a single home I'm moving into, and the person who owned it was really avid gardener. He has fenced-in gardens, a couple little frog ponds, bat box, all kinds of fruits and vegetables, which are fallow this year. But one thing, and it's a beautiful yard, and it's kind of small. It's between Wycombe and Union Avenues out there, but it's big enough to have all this condensed there. And also he has rain barrels, you know, to store it, to release it into the vegetation as it needs it.
Right.
The only problem I saw so far is there's a lot of mosquitoes out there, and I was wondering how I might be able to control them.
Oh, that should not be a problem. Now, are these cowboy rain barrels? Did he kind of make them himself?
No, they're like plastic ones, you know, with the faucets at the bottom and hoses to direct it.
Oh, okay, so they're professionally made. Well, when you buy those rain barrels, as when you buy new windows, they're supposed to come with screening that goes...
They all have screens.
...on top. But you think mosquitoes are still somehow breeding in the water?
I don't know where they're breeding in. I just wanted to bring up because I know water's a problem. And there's two small frog ponds with a couple frogs, you know, maybe 4 feet across by 2 feet across.
Okay, so that's where the mosquitoes are coming from, because really, if they are true frog ponds, they probably don't have fish in them.
I don't think so.
Yeah, because what you have to choose one or the other. If you have a big koi pond, then it's very difficult for frogs and toads to breed in it because the fish will eat the eggs and the tadpoles. So it's either one or the other. Now, the good news is there is a totally natural control that is literally perfect for your situation. And it's known as BTI. I use it myself. I have an area of my backyard that stays very wet, which is great because it means we breed a lot of lightning bugs and toads, but it can breed mosquitoes. So in the spring, when the mosquitoes come out again and they're starting to breed, I just take a shaker jug of BTI granules and I go out to that area, and once a month and I just shake some of the granules around into the wet soil. And it doesn't hurt anything, but it prevents the mosquito eggs from becoming adults. Totally non-toxic to anything else. It doesn't hurt the toads, the frogs, the lightning bugs. And they also make it in the shape of like little charcoal briquettes to toss into larger bodies of water and little donuts to toss into little bodies of water. You'll find it in a variety of different shapes. It's not all that expensive. And especially if you treat all your water very early in the season, then the female mosquitoes will take a blood meal somewhere after they wake up from hibernation. They'll lay their eggs in this treated water, but no new mosquitoes will come out. So you can end it with that, really, not even the first generation, but the last generation from the previous year. So if you're on top of it, you can have a mosquito-free zone.
Oh, wow. So it wouldn't hurt the frogs or even birds if you put a little in the bird bath or anything. Right?
These organic pesticides, these organic tactics are so specific and so safe for the environment. It's such a pleasure to, quote, be an expert in them and represent them, because all BTI does is prevent any biting fly that breeds in water. So not only mosquitoes, but those biting midges, those lousy gnats that come after you in the spring, and black flies.
Yeah.
They're all in the same family. They all breed in standing water. So you treat all your water with BTI, you get rid of a whole bunch of annoying insects, and you do absolutely no harm to the environment.
Well, that's really great information, Mike. Thank you so much.
All right. My pleasure, Frank. Take care.
You too. Bye-bye.
All right, it's time for the question of the week. Wasps in the windowsills and yellow jackets just about everywhere. Alexis Landis, You Bet Your Garden producer, start us off with our first of many stinging questions.
Sure, Mike. We heard from Jennifer in Silver Spring who writes, I've recently noticed a lot of bees near my flower bed, just steps away from my front door. They fly into a hole in the dirt and then more come out. I didn't know that honeybees nested in the ground. I'd feel bad pouring chemicals in the ground to kill them, but I'm very allergic to bee stings. Any advice?
Well, you wish they were bees, Jen. Now, if this were spring and the, quote, bees were flying into individual holes in the ground, they'd be gentle, non-stinging native bees. Honeybees are not native. They're from Africa. Feral honeybee colonies are rare. Most honeybees live in man-made hives. And honeybees never, ever nest in the ground. This time of year, lots of insects that look like bees coming and going from a single hole in the ground indicates a yellowjacket nest. There are hundreds of highly aggressive stinging hornets down there. And poisonous chemicals won't destroy the nest because of how it's constructed. Stop using that door if you can, and arrange to have someone eradicate the nest for you safely and effectively. A truly professional exterminator will use a specialized vacuum to suck the wasps out of the nest. Don't go near it yourself. Virtually all so-called bee sting deaths are actually caused by yellow jackets. These hornets like to sting. They can sting repeatedly. And when they sting, they inject you with a pheromone that entices other yellow jackets to come after you.
Well, Mike, I'm actually a little scared now because I think I might have a yellow jacket nest right outside of my house. And I'm really nervous that my little baby might get stung. Now, I know that you recommend some methods that use their aggression against them, like tricking them into flying into a bug zapper or the hose of a shop vac.
That's absolutely right. These wasps are so hardwired to be super aggressive that they will attack those noisy machines until the last wasp is gone from the nest. Non-allergic listeners who want to try and eradicate a nest electronically can find all the details on doing this in the Yellow Jacket articles at our website's A to Z Answers section.
Now, we also heard from Larry in Delaplaine, Virginia, who recently added an off-the-grid option. He writes, I live out in the country and my yellow jacket nests aren't always within the reach of an extension cord to power the machines you recommend. So I use a method I picked up years ago from Mother Earth News. On a cool night, when all the yellow jackets have returned to the nest, cover the hole with a mason jar or large glass bowl. Make sure it's pushed down hard into the dirt and not just resting on the grass. In about 3 days, they'll all be dead. Mike, does this work?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's an old trick and a good one. You just need a nice level area around the hole, a very cool night, and nerves of steel.
But what if you don't know where the hole is? That's the question posed by Kirsten in Stafford, Virginia, who writes, Yellow jackets are congregating on 3 crepe myrtles in front of our house. Their population is increasing. We're scheduled to have new windows installed directly above these shrubs in a month, and I don't know where the nest is located. Is there anything we can do to ensure the safety of the installers?
Oh, man, keep looking for that nest. Otherwise, your best hope is to hang a number of wasp and hornet traps in the area. These are simple devices you'll find at any hardware, home, or garden store. The yellow jackets fly in, but they can't fly back out. The best baits are canned cat food or spoiled ham when the wasps are after protein, and overripe fruit when they're after sugar. Hang several traps containing each kind of bait in the area. And delay that installation if their numbers don't decline.
Mike, we have yet another wasp question for you.
Well, 'tis the season.
Dakota Rose in Washington, D.C. writes, My wasps aren't in the ground. They've nested in a crack in my windowsill. They are mean. They sting and the sting welts up and lasts for days. How can I get rid of the nasty things without setting fire to the house?
Ha! Put down that flamethrower, Dakota Rose, and get some horticultural oil, or even a big can of no-stick cooking oil spray, and approach that area slowly, spraying any visible wasps as you go. Then have somebody else carefully open the window while you protect them, and yourself, by soaking any wasps that emerge with the spray. As with our yellow jacket nest advice, do this at night when the weather is cool so the wasps will be moving slowly. Then thoroughly soak any nest you see with the spray inside the opened window. Really saturate them. Pour it on. Oil sprays are a great way to handle paper wasps and mud daubers who often nest in eaves, shutters, and other areas in or around windows and homes. As with insecticidal soaps, the sprays cover and suffocate the insects. No fire necessary. Well, those sure were some interesting options for dealing with angry, angry insects, now, wasn't they? Luckily for you, the question of the week appears in print at the Gardens Alive website. To read it over in detail, just click the link for the question of the week at our website, youbetyourgarden.org. Gardens Alive supports the You Bet Your Garden question of the week. Yikes, my producer is threatening to unplug my yellow jacket vac if I don't get out of this studio. We must be out of time. But you can call us anytime at 1-888-346-9499 or send us your email, your tired, your poor, your wretched refuse teeming towards our garden shore at garden@whyy.org. And visit our website, youbetyourgarden.org. where you'll find the answers to all of your garden questions, audio of this show, audio of past shows, and our podcast. Elizabeth Perez Luna is executive producer of audio content for WHYY. Ken Queter plays our theme song. Our engineer this week is Al. Thanks. Rich Banowitz and Sarah Kazar, You Bet Your Garden's Internet Illuminati. Our social media director is Amanda McGrath. Check out her fine work at the You Bet Your Garden Facebook page. Our sting-free staff includes editor Al Banks, production assistant Jolie Higazi, and Alexis Landis, who produces You Bet Your Garden for WHYY-FM in Philadelphia. I'm your host, somewhat aggressive Mike McGrath, and unless somebody drops a really big mason jar over my front door, I'll see you next week. I'm Mike McGrath, and on the next thrilling episode of You Bet Your Garden, we'll reveal a tantalizing possibility with this fast-growing tropical fruit. Plus your fabulous phone calls.